I love it. Well, it's funny. I feel the exact same way. I was in the Fountain City location yesterday, and a patient came in and was confusing me with you. And I had to tell him, I'm like, I hate to disappoint you, but I'm not Kelly, and I'm not Andy. I'm the other one.
I'm sorry I look haggard tonight. I actually went to yoga. Shout out to Vidya Hot Yoga. Y'all, it's a spiritual experience. Yeah. It's good. I think I did this lighting right. I don't know, because I feel like my office didn't have good, like, what am I trying to say? Connection, Wi-Fi. So I'm like in the living room right now, and so it's a mess. But hopefully, can I just brighten up these lights real quick?
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Real quick, guys, give us some feedback. Is our feed okay? Can you guys hear us? We want to make sure we provide a good experience for everybody. I see Katie, Amanda, what's going on over on Instagram? Great to see you guys. Thanks for hanging out.
That's as bright as they go.
I think you're good.
Is it good? You can see me. Okay, cool.
Katie says we look great.
Thank God.
Jessica says we look great. All right, we're perfect. You ready to, let me put this up real quick because I want to make sure Andy sees that. Roel, thank you so much, man.
Oh, hey, thank you. Yeah.
So kind. Thank you so much. We love you.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's get to some questions. I want to make sure we get to every single question tonight. For those of you who are new, we take live questions. These first couple came in throughout the week. So if you have a question for Andy, go ahead and put it in the comments and we'll get to every single one tonight. We're going to start with this one because it has to do with the Common Sense MD episode that went out this morning. I loved hearing Herb Ladley today, brought back such fond Kingsport and Holston Valley memories. He mentioned the potential false zero score on a calcium score. The question is, if I had a zero and then 7 years later had a zero, should I retest to check for a false score? To give context, they talked about the CT calcium score quite a bit in the episode and talked a little bit about false scores. Ange, how would you go about this one?
I think a retest is always good. I don't think you should just overtest. So if you're like keep getting zeros and you're worried that it's there, then you don't want to overtest and just keep doing CT calcium scores, because every time you're getting a CT scan, you're exposing yourself to radiation. So you don't want to just keep testing. But I think that if you have like moderate risk factors for it, if you're looking at anything within a CT calcium score, you're looking at heart disease. What does the calcification of your arteries look like? There's even something that Dr. Oz talked about in the longevity conference we went to, that there's good calcium and bad calcium. Mm. And I didn't really understand what he was saying by that. But he said there's a way to actually differentiate it with a new testing system that he has. So it might be that if there's a zero and then a zero, or even if it goes from zero to 90 something, you might be able to differentiate what's a good calcium and a bad calcium. I would say if you're really worried, there are some people that will do fluoroscopy and they'll shoot dye up your arteries to see how open and patent they are. That's the whole point of the calcium score, is to see how open your arteries. Is it plugged up by plaque, or is it open and nice and having nice flow with blood? So you can do fluoroscopy if you're really worried about it. You can do stress test, exercise stress test. But I'd say too, maybe repeat it. If you feel like it's a false reading, you should repeat it. But what are you going to do with the test is a really important question too. What are you going to do with the test if that comes back and it's been 0, 0, now it's 90? So like, have a plan with what you're going to do with that. I'd say it's a pretty good indication that if you take care of yourself with proper nutrition, sleep, stress, other modifiable risk factors, thickness of your blood, if you're taking testosterone, you're probably in good hands with a zero and a zero. I'd still retest. I'd retest every couple of years.
I love that question. Thank you so much for watching the Common Sense MD episode this morning. But they did. If you haven't watched it, guys, after this show, I'd encourage everybody to. It's a great one just around protecting your heart, and it's something that I know a lot of you guys are wanting, and you know we're all trying to do that, because it does start earlier than I realized. And Andy, that was kind of my big aha moment during that episode was you need to start now. You know, you don't want to wait until an event happens, of course. So thank you so much for the question.
Yes.
Let's see. I see Jasmine's in here. Jasmine, our esthetician in Knoxville. Hello, Jasmine. I love you. We've got Rachel in here over in the Johnson City office.
We had so much fun today. Rachel is helping me pick out new figs. So Rachel, if we do not complete that task tomorrow, we have failed. Okay. I need a neutral color that makes my eyes pop.
Rachel, let's get on it. Let's get on it, Rachel.
Let's get on it. Okay. Forget the patience. I need some new figs.
all right. Let's get to the next question here. This is one I know, man, I know everyone, I feel like, you know, everyone's gone through something like this over the last month or so. I'm struggling with my second sinus infection since October. Do not like taking antibiotics? What are your thoughts and suggestions for silver nasal spray to help prevent sinusitis?
Yes. Yes. Silver is great. Silver can, the things that I know silver can be good for, silver can, it can coagulate a burn, like a bleed. Like you could put silver to like stop a nasal bleed. Like that's something that's used in the ER. And then two, silver can kill bacteria. I believe it's with the nanoparticles that come off of the silver ion that help attack bacteria. Silver is actually used in a Berkey water filter, which is under review. That's a very interesting topic right now because I forget which governmental entity put not a ban, but a warning on Berkeys, something about them being pesticides. They use silver in part of their filtration system to kill the things that are in water to purify your water. Silver is part of that. So yeah, so I think this is all to say you're struggling with your second sinus infection 6 October. Absolutely. I think silver is great. I think iodine is great. I've been using Cofix. I use Cofix every day now. And if I'm going in a crowded room, spray it again. I love it. If I'm going in an airplane, I spray it. I was around a lot of people with COVID over the holidays. Never got it. Cofix is my thing. Struggling with second sinus infection, I kind of check your risk factors for immunity. We could increase your vitamin D, your vitamin C, your nutrition, your sleep, your stress, making sure you're getting outside and walking. It's a great thing is being out in the sun. Methylene blue is really great. So methylene blue works on the mitochondria to make ATP. It also has antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal, antiparasitic properties about it. So I think methylene blue would be another good thing for you. Here in Johnson City too, we have a lady, she's a syrup lady. She has the syrup shop. She's awesome. She makes concoctions with sumac, with elderberry, and with another combination. You'd have to go see her. I've had patients that have been on Z-Pak after Z-Pak after Z-Pak after Z-Pak go and see her, and they're helping themselves get accommodated to the environmental exposures in our area. A lot of the times what happens is you have these allergens that cause your body to freak out, to try to push them out. And as you're doing that, you're catching other things and they're staying in and growing. So kind of say, I would say anything to boost your immune system. Yes. For silver nitrate, look at Cofix and look at methylene blue.
Out of curiosity, are you doing Cofix only through the nose? Or are you also spraying it in the back of your throat?
I do both.
You do both. Okay.
Yeah.
Great question there. Thank you so much. I see Robin Riddle's in the building. Robin, what's going on? Great to see you.
Robin. Robin, sorry I didn't answer your call today. Please forgive me.
Robin.
Robin's like, hey, I called you a couple times. I was like, no. And then I looked at him. Yes, yeah, you did. You did, Robin.
Come on, man. Come on, man.
Come on.
Come on.
I need to clear these messages.
Hey, real quick, I want to put this up from Chuck because it has to do with this the previous question around the CT calcium score. What did Andy mean by thickness of blood? If you're if you're talking about testosterone, can you clarify that real quick?
Yes. So thickness of blood, we're talking about hemoglobin, hematocrit. So it's how thin or thick or viscous the blood is. Testosterone makes red blood cells. It goes to the bone marrow and says, make more red blood cells. If you look on a lab of hemoglobin hematocrit between a female and a male, they're going to look different because men make more hemoglobin hematocrit. So what in relationship to a CT calcium score, I was saying, if you have if to retest might be that, hey, I'm on testosterone and it thickens my blood and I'm having to donate blood in order to get it out, that might be a ringer for me to think, maybe I need to see what the how patent my arteries are. Maybe a CT calcium score. Am I pushing very thick blood through a very narrow space? That's going to be a harder, that's going to be a harder thing for your body to accommodate to than open space, thinner blood. But thickness of blood is hemoglobin, hematocrit, because testosterone increases those the red blood cell count, which then increases hemoglobin, hematocrit.
Chuck, thank you for putting that in there, and I hope that helps. We actually got I'm going to go to a hematocrit question, one that came in through email, or sorry, this came in over Instagram, and let me see if I can find it because it'd be super timely. And now, oh, there we go. Question is, what do you consider a high hematocrit level? I have an 11. Should I be concerned? This came on Instagram. What's your thoughts?
I'm not following this question very well just because the 11 doesn't really match with the labs that we do. It might, maybe you're talking about hemoglobin.
Maybe.
And it depends on female or male. Maybe. So they're going to be very different. Okay. When we get concerned, it's in our handbook as providers for when we get concerned about high hematocrit levels. For the particular lab that we draw, you're looking at range of normal up to 49 or 50 in men. That's kind of range of normal. That's the high end of normal for hematocrit level. Hemoglobin is going to be upper range of normal, like up to 17. When those numbers get to 19 and 54, we get concerned and say, donate blood. That's when we say. It's usually 19 and 54. If those numbers are creeping, and all that deals with too, thickness of blood can come from several different etiologies. Mainly in performance medicine, we're thinking of testosterone therapy. It's secondary erythrocytosis, meaning that we put testosterone in and it does something else. That means that we need to do something about it. People can have high hematocrit or hemoglobin levels naturally. Like there's hemochromatosis, which kind of increases the thickness of your blood. You're also going to notice polycythemia vera, where you're having increased blood counts, red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets. So it depends on what that is in relationship to what it is coming from. So if I would be concerned, if my blood values thickness continue to be high, I would say, what does my liver look like? Because that's the coagulation factors are coming from your liver. So I'd say, maybe we need a liver ultrasound, or maybe I need to check my liver function testing on a metabolic panel. But if it's coming from testosterone, usually think 19 and 54 for a male. Females on testosterone too can get thicker blood. Females though are at a little bit lower risk of that being a problem because they're already bleeding. That usually females are having active cycles. So for their entire lives, we usually, when we do testosterone, females aren't cycling as much anymore, but they've had that opportunity to get the blood out. So the metals usually recycle, iron recycles. So if you don't get it out, it stays in and can accumulate. But women usually have lower iron because they have natural bleeds.
And if you're with us live, the person who asked this question, if you give us any context there, I'll make sure I keep an eye out for it, and we'll answer it in any way that we can. Thank you for sending that in. We're going to go to this is a pre-op scenario. The question is, suggestions for pre-op prep for hip replacement surgery outpatient. Any suggestions to combat anxiety pre-surgery? Currently taking the Dr. Roger stress formula. And then I'll go ahead and put this up so you can see it. Told to stop all supplements 10 days, I believe, before surgery. And then how soon can post-op, can they start taking them again? Great question. Thank you so much. And everyone, we're going to be praying for you as you go into surgery. But Ange, I'll let you take it away.
Man, that's a great question, because they're actually changing a lot of things pre-op now, especially for surgeries. The big thing on here is that people on the GLP-1s and GLP-1 combinations, they are having a lot of gastric slowing of gastric emptying, gastric delay. And so they're actually having new recommendations and guidelines in our area hospitals of when you stop those. So I think this is important to consider because it's a hot topic. Pre-op prep for hip surgery outpatients to combat anxiety pre-surgery. First off, I think anything pre-op is you want to boost your immune system. I may have a different opinion than surgeons on this, and I'm not a surgeon, so take it with a grain of salt. When we're taking vitamins, we're supposed to get them from the environment. These are all naturally occurring vitamins and supplements that are supposed to enhance our cellular function. We're supposed to get them from food. If you think what happened 2000 years ago, they didn't have a vitamin D shop. Mm-hmm. You got vitamin D from being outside.
Right.
They didn't have a vitamin C, a vitamin V. You got those from food. Omega-3s are non-essential fatty acids. You got them from foods. I actually was on, when I was in Up With People, this was 15 years ago, I traveled with a lady from Nepal and I took a bunch of vitamins because dad told me to. I'm glad I did, but she goes, why are you doing that? And I said, oh, it's good for you. She's like, shouldn't you be getting that from the foods you're eating? And I'm like, yes. In America, that doesn't happen. It just doesn't. That's what I would say now. Then I was like, you're right. I only need to eat foods. But we don't get the quality of food that we used to 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago. So I like vitamins. It would almost like be saying, oh, stop all vitamins 10 days before. It's like, stop eating 10 days before your pre-op. I don't think that's a good suggestion. What I think is happening is that there's a lot of different vitamins that can have interactions with some of the things that you might get during surgery. Anesthesia, post-op pain relief. So if you're having anything, if it were me going into it, and I've done this because I've had surgery, I take everything. I take everything until the night before, except I adjust my insulin because my insulin is going to be affected because I have to be nothing by mouth. You can't eat anything before going into anesthesia. And then two, I would stop anything that would deal with serotonin. Mm-hmm. Like serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, anything that's dealing with the neurotransmitters, because you might have some post-op pain relief you need afterwards. And you're working on that for dissociative functions to put you to sleep. So I think anything that's going to deal with serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, or pain, if you're on low-dose naltrexone, I'd probably stop that too, and probably stop it out at least a week. I know the second question is in there too about...
Let's see, right here. How soon post-op?
So I'd say too, give it a couple days to a week. Probably, but then again, it depends on the vitamins that you're doing. And anything with vitamins that are going to make you bleed. So if you're on an aspirin, pycnogenol, things that are helping out with the thickness of blood through platelets or coagulation, I'd stop those two. Omegas, I would probably stop too because it's going to increase. Definitely omegas I would stop because you're going to bleed more. Mm. Anything that's going to deal with bleeding or neurotransmitters, I would definitely stop. And stop a week to 10 days out is good. And then I would start it a week to 10 days post-op. And it depends on how you're doing post-op. If you're bleeding or you're having trouble healing with certain infections, you might not want to take a lot of omega-3 because it might make you bleed more, or aspirin because it might make you bleed more. But I'd say, again, same time before, same time after. Thing dealing with anxiety before is that, like, I think the Dr. Rogers stress relief is amazing. It has saffron, L-theanine, ashwagandha, three adaptogens that help balance cortisol. Maybe looking at Xanax. I know that's like going through a benzo and that's a heavier hitter, but also you're going into a hip surgery. I mean, that's a big thing. Yeah. Hips, just if I want to give you encouragement, hips are the bomb. You've chosen well. If you've chosen to get a hip surgery, hips are amazing. I did a lot of those in rotations on my orthopedic surgery with an amazing orthopod. And hips are really great to come out of. They have a lot of great recovery rates. So hips are good. A lot of times that's outpatient. So that's a good one.
What a great question. And I hope that offers some encouragement to you. And like I said, we'll be thinking about you. And if you have any more questions, please don't hesitate. Again, a quick teaser for the Common Sense MD episode with Dr. Ladley. The aspirin topic was covered towards the end, as well as the omega-3 controversies. So definitely, again, I encourage everyone to watch that episode. Let's see here. we gotta up with people cast member in here.
I just wanted
to put that in there.
You need them wherever you go.
Yes. Thank you for being here. I see Kathy's in
awesome.
Here.
That is awesome. You meet the best people. I loved my up with people. I drank that Kool-Aid. Yeah. I loved up with people. It was a really wonderful, wonderful experience.
Carol, thank you for putting that in there. I see Kathy's in here. Kathy, great to see
Kathy
you.
Kathy Gregg? Is she here? Yeah. Oh, there you are. My girl, Kathy. In the hearse.
And I want to put this up from Jack. Jack, thank you so much for this. And again, you know, anyone who's with us live, if you have experiences, any sort of encouragement you can offer, that really does help. And Jack, thank you for this. I hope the person who asked that question is watching and gets to see this from you. Let's see here. I see Tabitha's in here from our Kingsport office. Tabitha, so good to
Tabitha.
See you.
Carter's
in here. Carter, what's going
Carter.
On?
Carter.
We got a great crew in here. Thank you guys
so much
for
saying to Cartier. Cartier. She liked that diamond.
Guys, we appreciate you. And like I said before, we got one more question, then we're gonna take live questions. We're doing live Q&A. We do this every single Tuesday at 7 p.m. Let's go to this is a very common question we get. What supplements should you be taking for osteoporosis? And then it goes in to say my vitamin D level is 32. What's a safe vitamin D dose? What's your thoughts?
I think safe vitamin D dose is what your response to treatment will get up to. I think getting up to 80 to 100 is good. We used to say 60 to 80. We can really push that dose up. People really want to get that. But when I went to that conference, they said, our country is the lowest of the vitamin. Like, we have really low vitamin D here. 32 is going to be above average. It's going to be higher than normal, or it's going to be normal on a lab. You want to get above 30. It's going to say that you're too high if you're above 80 to 100. But I think 80 to 100 is where you want to be. I think it'll say above 100 is too high. Vitamin D is fat soluble, so it's going to stick around. So it's not something that, like, you can go vitamin D toxic. But it's just, you really have to get high. I believe Dad said there's only a few cases of vitamin D toxicity. I think safe doses, we usually say 5,000 IUs of vitamin D3. If you're above the age of 40, adding a K2. If you're a little bit younger than that too, that can help. Vitamin K2 or MK677, I believe is a K2 product. It helps direct calcium. So I think start with 5,000, see what it does for you. I think 5,000 is baseline. Mm. And then of D3, that's an animal-derived D and not a plant-derived like D2. You can also take 50,000 IUs of a vitamin D injection, and it will get your D up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Yes. So I think we should need to shoot for the stars of vitamin D, and you will feel different. You will feel better.
Thank you so much for that question.
And what supplements for osteoporosis? Sorry. Calcium and boron. This is a great question for Jill too, because I think she has a podcast on this, on calcium. So if we can maybe put that in the show notes of her particular podcast about supplementation for osteoporosis, because it's calcium is what you're looking for. Calcium, vitamin D, boron is another one to strengthen bones, and estrogen. Estrogen's great for your bones.
And one thing I'll mention for the people here live, a quick way after the show, we'll get that link to Jill's episode on osteoporosis. If you search Jill Henritze, H-E-N-R-I-T-Z-E, and osteoporosis, that video will show up first. Great episode that you did with her on all the things you can do for that, as well as y'all get to DEXA scans, just really informative. So thank you so much for mentioning that. Real quick, I just gotta say this. Zach is in the building, our unbelievable video editor. Zach, we love you so much. Thank you. He's telling everybody to subscribe to the Diabetes Tour Guide and Performance Medicine on YouTube if you haven't. So do that for my man, Zach. Do it for him. And if Aaron's with you, Aaron, I love you. Thank you for allowing us to work with Zach. He's been such an amazing addition. So all the videos you see, those are Zach's edits. Zach, we appreciate you, brother. Thank you for being here tonight. I see Riley's in the building, and JC, Riley.
Oh, Riley. Oh, no. Riley in the house. Right now, we had fun today. We had a really fun day at the office today.
Riley, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. Okay, I got to meet Riley a few weeks ago.
That means a lot. I'm just going to tell you, if you look over here, who's online, we've been at work all day.
Yep.
And y'all take your time out to still be at work.
Yep. Yep.
That's really amazing. That just shows everybody on here, if you're listening, you've got a good group. It's great. Yep. This is great.
We love you guys. Thank y'all so much. Y'all mean the world to us. Let's get this last one in here. Then we're going to take live questions. If you have a question for Andy, go ahead and put in the comments. I see Alyssa. I see tons of great questions already coming through.
Yeah.
Let's get to this one. This is a thyroid question. If your thyroid is at an optimal level, but you still have TPOs 38, ooh, can you have Hashimoto's? Andy, can you explain TPO for me?
Oh, God, that's a good question. That's a great question. Thyroid peroxidase antibodies. So TPO is very pathognomonic for Hashimoto's thyroiditis, usually associated with low thyroid. So, this is a good question because actually this is me. If this is you, this is also me. So my TPO is like 35 or 36. Mm. Like I'm right on that cusp where it is positive, but I also have type 1 diabetes, which is another autoimmune disease where kind of when you get one, it makes you susceptible to all of them. So can you still have Hashimoto's? I think technically, yes. That would be my opinion. Other people might disagree with me. Because the antibody is positive, I think that, yeah, it can be there. Even if the thyroid is an optimal level, it means that it hasn't negatively affected your thyroid on a number yet. But you can still have symptoms if you have a positive TPO. My encouragement for this situation would be, though, not to really own it. I wouldn't own I am a Hashimoto's, I'm a thyroid patient, because then you're probably going to get a worsening thyroid. The more we put power into that disease state and not say, hey, I have autoimmunity, it's showing up within my thyroid right now, how do I support it naturally as possible? Or to recognize it, if you really have symptoms of the TPO of 38, I'd absolutely treat it. Mm. But look for, that is autoimmunity. So that's what that is. Mm. That's autoimmunity. So I would say technically, yes. What you do about it can be vastly different depending on the practitioner that you work with. I'd work on autoimmunity first.
Okay.
LDN, vitamin D, vitamin C, methylene blue. Y'all, like, do you know that song? I'm blue, da-ba-dee, da-ba-da. I'm blue, da-ba-dee. Like, that's me every morning. I'm cranking the heat up on the methylene blue. If I'm going to be sponsored by anybody, it'd be sponsored by methylene blue.
You know what? I'm going to do this for my mother, just in case she's watching. Just, you know, it runs in the family.
It runs in the family. We've got the blue craze.
I hope that helps. It's a great thyroid question. I think, I don't know if Robin's with us still now, but we're either getting ready to do, and explain this episode on kind of an autoimmune diet, or we already have. I apologize for, dropping the ball on this, but I'll find out. And if we have, I'll make sure to put it, in the comments. I see Lisa's in here. Lisa, what's going on?
Lisa.
So good to see you. We're going to get to live questions here real soon. Katie Lynn from Bristol, our Bristol office. What's going on? What's going on? Katie Lynn, you guys, the Bristol office got featured literally like 10 minutes ago in the Believe in Bristol, in a Believe in Bristol post. We're on State Street and on the Virginia side, our Bristol office is. So huge shout out to the Bristol office. The whole crew there is just amazing. Let's get to live questions, shall we?
Shall we?
Shall we do it?
Shall we? Let's do it.
And Instagram, I'm talking to you guys too. If you guys have a question, go ahead and put it in the comments. I see Laura's in there. Onward Knox, so good to see you. Love all of our Knoxville colleagues. Thank y'all for hanging out with us tonight. If y'all have a question on Instagram, go ahead and put it in the comments. Let's see here. Where are we at? Sorry, I'm searching. Let's get to Vicky here on Facebook. Recommendation for sciatica treatment. super interesting. When I think of sciatica, I think of back.
Yes. Yes. It's a primary nerve coming out of your spinal root. That's like, if you get sciatica, it's a pretty debilitating pain that shoots down. Usually one side of your leg is usually kind of what you think of when you think of sciatica. That's a tough one, I think, too. Anything dealing, that's a nerve issue. So if you're dealing with nerve issues, I think B12 and magnesium, cranking the heat up on magnesium and B12 to help sensitize those nerves. Two, we have a new provider, Brittany Miller.
Yep.
Like, she's gold. Mm. Y'all, she's gold. Like, she's Olympic gold. I'll take the bronze. Okay, she's Olympic gold. She's amazing. She came from podiatry, and she has a lot of success with nerve pain with doing alpha lipoic acid.
Yep.
So that can help out a lot with nerve pain is what we're looking for. But two, with sciatica, you might want to look at the nerve outlets. Like, maybe getting an MRI, you'd have to start off. It depends on the severity of it. Because if you have an obstruction where you're not getting your nerve outlet out, you might want to see anatomically what that looks for. Like, you might want to see what that looks like anatomically. So maybe considering imaging, starting off with heat. I think heat and ice are amazing. Ice usually decreases inflammation. Heat usually brings in red like blood flow and blood supplies. I think heat, maybe getting an infrared sauna or jacuzzi, looking at PT to how you carry your back. There's a great episode on back pain with Dr. Osborne that we did with Dad that I would look at that episode and follow what that guy does. Dr. Osborne is wildly intelligent and deals with back stuff. And then do your modifiable risk factors with your naturals. And then if like nothing else is working, I'd look at imaging. I had a patient today, crazy back pain with a lot of sciatic type symptoms, one side and shooting down his leg, debilitating. He ended up getting surgery for it. And he got, I think about a month or two ago with Dr. Wiles in Chattanooga. That needs a shout out because he said that's the best thing that's ever happened to him.
Say his name one more time.
Dr. Wiles. He used to be in this area and then he moved to Chattanooga. When I'm telling you, I know five people that have gone to him and said it's the most unbelievable surgeon ever. Like, this guy was singing his praises today. And I think that's an amazing tool. When you're looking at back surgery, you want to know who to go to. I just have heard nothing but good things. So this guy had to get surgery for it. But you think, whenever you're thinking of nerves, you want to say, can I resensitize the nerve? Is there anything that's obstructing it from its outlet? Have I done all my modifiable risk factors as far as positioning, strengthening the back muscles and the paraspinal muscles through proper exercise, applying heat, B12, magnesium, alpha lipoic acid, maybe some anti-inflammatories like turmeric, cumin, and then looking at getting imaging, then looking at surgical focus.
It's a great question, and this might not even hit at all, but it does the what's that thing you guys use? I should know this as a tennis guy. What's the little thing? It's like a gun, Theragun.
Theragun, yeah, Theragun.
Is that for sciatic?
That might make it hurt worse if you throw it. Maybe it'll give you some relief if you can kind of get down some of the divots. If there's some inflammation, like it's pushing on that nerve outlet. If you have some, if it's muscular and not an outlet, like I'm talking about an outlet coming out of the spinal cord, mm-hmm. not like a muscle, like Got a it. Inflammatory muscle.
Got it.
Also for sciatica treatment, you could do some steroids too. Steroids will bring down the inflammation and calm it. People also do gabapentin. Gabapentins and Lyrica tend to be kind of the pain relief or pain sensitizers that are synthetic. Not a bad idea, but that's kind of the treatment algorithm that I would go in from natural to prescriptive to surgical.
Vicky, thank you so much for putting that in there. I know that.
I'm sorry you're dealing with that. If you're dealing with that, I'm sorry. That's hard. That's hard.
I'm going to put this up here for you, brother. Christy.
Oh, Christy. Oh my God. Y'all, you don't even know. You don't even know. I love Christy. I love all my patients. I love Christy. Christy, you are so sweet. I will have to tell you about Christy without sharing your personal information. Of course, I learn so much from her. Mm. I learn a lot from Christy. And it's because she comes in with ideas, which I love. I feel like we get so lucky because we get proactive patients. And I'm up front with Christy. I was like, we're going to work together. If you find something you want to try, let's try it and see if it does it. And I love her. She's so willing to try things. And she's amazing. She's just amazing.
Christy, thank you so much for putting that in. Yes. Thank you for being here with us tonight. Let's go to another question here. We appreciate you guys. I'm going to get to every single one, I promise. T Warrior One on YouTube. New here and stunned. I flunked my dot physical with a, DOT. Sorry about that. 11.1 A1C. I'm taking everything natural and metformin and cut sugar and wheat in half. Am I giving you enough context there, Ant?
I'm sorry about that. That's not fun.
If you have a question, I hope I didn't botch that that comment there, T. Warrior. I appreciate you being with us tonight.
Oh yeah, if there wasn't a question associated with that, you're doing great. So too, cutting sugars in half, wheat's just associated with carbohydrate intake, and remember, insulin responds to carbohydrates primarily. 90% to 100% of our response of insulin is going to be to carbs. So you're doing all the right stuff. Metformin's amazing. Naturals like berberine, cinnamon. I can't think of the other ones right off the top of my head of naturals, but everything to help sensitize insulin and decrease glucose production is great. I guarantee you that's going to come down. And also to exercise. Exercise gets the blood, that gets sugar to the muscle. That gets it out of the bloodstream. Exercise and water will absolutely help you.
TT Warrior, thank you. Thank you for putting that in there.
And I'm sorry you're going through that.
Yeah. I hope that helps. If we can clarify anything, let us know in the comments. I'm going to get to, let's see, Amber's question here. Can people with autoimmune disease use astragalus, echinacea, etc.?
You know, I would have said yes until like 2 days ago. And I had actually had a patient tell me that echinacea can actually increase autoimmune flares. That's not something that I knew. I thought these are more calming factors. I will just tell you personally, I don't use those two a lot with echinacea. I usually use if you're looking for like getting rid of viral illness or bacteria illness. If you're going to use those for treatment of the autoimmune disease, I would look more for anti-inflammatories like curcumin, turmeric, lotus naltrexone, vitamin D. I would look more towards that. And go out, my best friend, methylene blue. Why not? But I would have to look that up more because that patient told me, she's like, I've recently heard that echinacea can actually increase autoimmune flares.
Amber, thank you for putting that in there. And it's so interesting. And we always say this, like, it's interesting how things change. Like, you know, we're just like everyone here, we're learning every single day. And it's kind of what makes shows like this fun. We get to learn together. So thank you, Amber, for putting that in there. Roel on YouTube, I'm sorry I missed you there. I missed a couple here. I'll get to everybody. Any thoughts on cocoa flavanol supplements like Cocovia? Dr. Peter Attia and Rhonda Patrick discussed them on a recent podcast. What's your thoughts?
I actually don't know Cocovia. Okay, so I'm actually just going to pull it up right now. Yep. Cocovia. Let's see what's in there. Flavonoids are good. Flavonoids are amazing. Let's see what Cocovia is made of. So it's saying that it naturally increases nitric oxide levels, boosts essential nutrient and oxygen delivery to the brain, fighting age-related memory decline, improves circulation. So anything that's going to increase, it's its own cocoa extract. This is what it's made of. I need to see like ingredients. Anything that's going to increase nitric oxide is good. Totally, totally good. So if you're looking for something that does that, yes. Let's see. Supplement facts. Here we go. It's plant-based. Other ingredients, cocoa powder, oat fiber with alkali. It's saying that it's just like cocoa. That's all I'm getting in there. Cocoflavanols. So this is not something I'm particularly familiar of just that particular compound. But if it does what it says about increasing nitric oxide, I think that's fantastic. Nitric oxide is just going to be great for the integrity of the arterial wall. It makes it very flexible and loose and relaxed. So I think that's good. As we age, our arteries stiffen. So I think that'd be fine. There's a lot of different products out there that say they increase nitric oxide. There's another brand by this guy named Nathan Bryan, I think, that you can test if you have enough nitric oxide. But you're getting very much on a cellular level there. I think if you take a product like that, you might not expect you feel any difference. But if you do feel different, that's great. But you might not expect that. That might be more for longevity.
All right, Roel, I hope that helps, brother. Let's get to Alyssa here. I see Alyssa has a couple questions here in regards to type 1. Alyssa has your book, by the way, right now, which is
cool. And I remember Alyssa from last time I was on. It's nice to have you on again.
The question is, how long does the honeymoon stage usually last in kids with type 1? And then I'll go on and put this one up here. Is berberine a good idea for a kid with type 1, or could that make him go too low? And I'll let you take it away.
Those are great questions. First up, Alyssa, I hate you're going through what you're going through right now. It's really, really tough. And like, you're just like a warrior mama to be looking out for your baby. I know he's not a baby, but still. How long does a honeymoon phase last? It lasts different in every person. It can last up to several years, or it can last like a couple weeks. So it depends on the beta cell destruction, how much C-peptide and insulin levels are left. So you can measure, you can kind of get a little bit of a measurement of what beta cell function looks like by how much C-peptide and insulin is left. So you can measure that through the serum. I would say a couple months. I'd say a couple months to 6 months is most likely what I've seen. Mine was about three. Kelly's, my sister, was probably 6 months to 9 months of a honeymoon phase. Honeymoon phase just means that you're still, for those of you who don't know, you're still making your own insulin. The autoimmune attack has it. I would say instead of berberine, your second question, instead of berberine, I wouldn't do that for a kid just yet, because I've actually looked it up for some kids who have some insulin resistance. Can you use berberine? There's not a lot of great data out there on a time, like an age that they want it. Some say above 13. I think above 13 is fine. I'd say for a newly diagnosed type 1, I wouldn't necessarily put him on him just yet. I would make sure that he's doing a lot of good natural fatty acids, vitamin D. He's eating well, sleeping well. I think that's going to be more helpful for his sugars and type 1 in the long run than berberine would right now. I've recently started taking berberine 200 milligrams, and it hasn't made a huge dent in hypoglycemic events. But I think if I took more, I'd probably notice it more. But I don't think it's necessary for him right now. But I think kind of later on in high school, early college, if he wanted to incorporate that, then I think that'd be fine. But just to watch it and do a lower dose. Those are great questions. I hope. Oh, thank you. That means a lot.
The book is incredible. I'm biased, but man, that book is incredible. Hey, Alyssa, thank you so much.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you so much for putting that in there. Let's keep going here. Where am I at? If I'm missing people, I apologize. I'm going to do the best I can. I'm getting such great questions. One, I'm going to put this, comment up from Amber, because it's, around the sciatica, shockwave therapy has worked. Amber's saying, so thank you for putting this up here, Amber. I hope that helps Vicky.
Oh, great. Think,
on Facebook. Thank you for putting that in there. Let's get to Helen. Let's see who I believe, if I remember correctly. Yeah, there we go. Helen is, I guess, related to an Up With People crew member.
What? Are we having an uppy reunion right now? You meet him wherever you freaking go. That's awesome, Helen.
Helen is asking, are you guys selling the multivitamin you write about on Facebook? 64 years old, feel like I'm 100.
Come on in.
We can help. Best daily vitamins. What's your answer to this?
Dr. Rogers' vitamins, amazing.
Yeah.
Yes. I'd say too, most of the vitamins, I would have said Life Extension 2-A-Day would have been the alternative to it. Most of the over-the-counter vitamins for multis are just giving me a little bit of everything. And two, what we've done with Dr. Rogers' vitamin, the one we're selling that on Facebook, that gets you the higher doses of the stuff that we recommend all in one.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Dang.
Thank you, team.
Hey, team.
Hey, team.
Vitamin A, look, vitamin D, you get 5,000 IUs of vitamin D in this one vitamin. You do have to take three of them. Pay attention. B12, you're getting 1,000 micrograms of B12 in this. I mean, we've really cranked the heat up on this. You're getting 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. Maybe that's why I'm not getting sick. I'm taking a lot of vitamin C.
Oh, you put that back up there. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, as I'm like, yeah, really close. No, that's good. That's good. It has K2 in it as well. So that's why I like that one, because you can cut out some of the other ones. Technically speaking, if you take that one with an omega, the other ones could just be added on for fun.
gonna put
Depending, everyone's very different.
I'm gonna put this up from Carter. Thank you for putting this in here. We will have these available online soon. The store is not live yet, but it's in the works. So for those who aren't near an office, that will be available to you guys soon, and we'll keep you guys posted on Facebook and on this show. If you're close to any one of our offices, whether it's Knoxville, Fountain City, Bristol, Johnson City, Kingsport, all of the Dr. Rogers formulas are there. Let's keep going here. I want to make sure we get to everybody. Where am I at? No, I'm sorry. I'm getting a ton of great comments. Thank you guys. Let's see here. Question from my man Mark. Any thoughts on Hashimoto's thyroiditis has a direct link or precursor for systemic lupus? What's your thoughts on this?
I have read about this, that there is a positive correlation in retrospective studies of Hashimoto's to lupus. Yes. So I absolutely think that this could be now precursor. I don't know about precursor that like Hashimoto's is the link to systemic lupus, but absolutely, when you get one autoimmune disease, you can get them all. There is retrospective studies about Hashimoto's that does link it. I think the percentage 3%, 5% risk factor, it's not crazy high from the report that I've read, but I do know that there is a link. Direct link or precursor, I think that'd be a little bit too specific, but it can, I think all of them are related.
Mark, thank you for putting that
Systemic
question in.
lupus is hard to pin. Lupus is tough.
Yep.
There's like a big acronym for all the stuff. And even like a lot of the times with, and two, for anybody that's here that's dealt with autoimmune disease, sometimes it's really hard to pin down. You can have every symptom of lupus and have a negative ANA. Like you can have the malar rash, you can have the joint pain, you can have the swelling and have a negative ANA. So I think lupus is really tough to pin down. But Hashimoto's can lead into a lot of other things.
Thank you for that, Mark.
That's
Thank you for
great.
teeing us up on
Mark,
that. Yeah.
he's so
Yeah,
smart.
I know.
I love
I
Mark.
know.
I love
Mark,
him.
you're intimidatingly smart to us,
Oh
okay?
my God, yes. No, Mark's gonna find the cure for something. Like, I don't know what it is, but he'll find the
We
cure.
love you, Mark. Let's get to this question from Vicky. Is it safe to leave Enovera birth control ring in and skip periods? I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Vicky. What's your
Yeah.
thoughts on this?
So there's like birth controls that are rings.
Yep.
You technically can, and two, I think it's up to 3 months. I will have to say I cheated on this one too, because I got a text from Carter. Thank God. Carter worked for OBGYN for a really long time, so he wanted to make sure that I knew the answer, but credit goes where credit is due. You
Shout out to Carter.
can shout out to Carter and to Dr. Martin and to Embrace Gynecology. I love them
They're
and did a rotation with them. But
incredible.
two, you can leave this one in. So you can leave it up to 3 months. Technically, the recommendations is that you leave it in for 21 days and then have that week of bleed 7 days out. But you can leave it up to 3 months and then take it out and then redo it again. There are a lot of birth controls, like even Season Ink is another one too, to where you can do it for an extended period of time without having the bleed. We get a lot of questions on should I bleed or should I not bleed? it's tough to come saying that from a guy's perspective of, oh yeah, right, have fun, everyone should bleed every month. Right. I do think that that's part of the natural process if it is, if it's not causing side effects or symptoms, and kind of what the underlying cause for it is. So if you're having PCOS symptoms, then you're going to have irregular cycles. But I do think the shedding cycle happens for a reason. So I think if you're able to do it, have a regular period every month, I think that technically does fare better. But can you do this and do it safely? Yes, up to 3 months.
Vicky, thank you so much for that question. Real quick, I'm going to go to Instagram. Huge shout out to, there's a couple with us on Instagram. We love you guys. I see Nathan there. I'm going to get to Jill's question. I don't know how to put it up there, Jill, so I'm just going to mention this to Andy. Jill on Instagram is asking, would methylene blue be helpful for fibromyalgia? What's your thoughts?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. Yep. So methylene blue is going to work on every part of the electron transport chain to create energy and make the cell work better. As you're making the cell work better, your body's going to work better. LDN is another good one for fibromyalgia. And fibromyalgia is interesting too, because there's this increased substance P. It's almost like your perception of pain is higher than other people's. I think too, absolutely. Methylene blue would definitely not hurt, but they are looking at it for chronic fatigue, chronic infections, chronic pain. Would probably, if you're looking at fibromyalgia, go at a higher dose and do 16 milligrams a day, or maybe even do like 10 twice a day.
Thank you, Jill, for that on Instagram. Let's go back to Facebook from Michelle. Great to see you. Suggestions for
Michelle.
I believe Michelle in Oak Ridge, I believe.
Wait, I grew up with all the Armistice. Yep. I love that family. Oh my gosh. Love, love, love this family.
Huge shout out to the Oak Ridge family. We love you guys.
Oak Ridge, the FUMC.
There we go.
For the win, FUMC.
There we go. Great to see. Great. I'm so glad, Michelle, you're with us tonight. And I'm going to get to your question here if I can read it right. Suggestions for treatment and supplements for strep/tonsillitis. If antibiotic, what dosage for adults? Michelle, thank you. What's your thoughts, Andrew?
Z-Pak. Oof. God, love a Z-Pak. I love it. Z-Pak, if you're looking at antibiotic, I think Z-Pak's the best. Kind of when I was starting with Dad, I was like, there's 1,000 antibiotics. What are we looking at? He kind of went, he's like, Z-Pak, amoxicillin or Augmentin, doxycycline or Levaquin for very severe. He's like, if you kind of stick within those, and then there's a lot of different ones that you can do, Ceftonir. You can get kind of in the weeds, even like erythromycin, clarithromycin, but I think Z-Pak is typically the most tolerated if you're looking at throat infections. Treatments and supplements, I actually use oil of oregano. I love it. If I'm in a show and need to make sure that my voice, I get a dropper from a natural health food store and coat my throat in oregano. So oil of oregano can absolutely help out with that. Increasing your immune system, of course. I even think about prevention of it, using that iodine, like that Cofix spray, both nasally and on your pharynx, and doing methylene blue, I think is great too. Methylene blue is antiviral. Most often what happens with strep tonsillitis, tonsils catch bacteria. That's what they do. They're almost like little lymph nodes. They catch the bacteria, store them, that comes in and kind of helps feed your immune system. So when you're getting tonsillitis or becoming inflamed because you're catching a lot of bacteria. So if you can prevent some of that stuff, I think that's good too. Z-Pak would be what I'd choose. Z-Pak is Zithromax 250. You take two the first day, then one a day for 4 days afterwards. Yep. You can even like double up the COVID protocol for Zithromax is usually Zithromax 250 twice a day for 5 days. So you can even like kind of double up on that. And anytime you're doing back, like antibiotic, protect the gut, get this good gut bacteria back on.
Michelle, thank you for putting that in there. I know that's going to help more than just one person. So thank you for putting the question in there. I'm going to keep moving here. I see Jack's asking about where can you get methylene blue. I know Jack's out of the state. If somebody on Facebook maybe could put in a link, on Amazon, there is a methylene blue drops that we like. And I think, I don't even know if we can talk about the capsules yet. I know that's something we've been chatting about, thinking about getting, doing that, but I know, I don't think that's in office yet. Let's go. Jack, I'll get back to you on that one. I promise.
I know that answer to where can I get methylene blue. I would get it on Amazon.
Okay.
BHP Pharmaceuticals. You want to make sure that it's pharmaceutical grade, and I would do the BHP Pharmaceuticals. A 16-ounce bottle is like 28, or maybe, no, I don't know if it's 28 bucks or not, but it's on Amazon.
Yeah.
So that's where we've been sending patients when we can't get it in office. But I think that's the best substitute is BHP Pharmaceuticals.
All right. Thank you, Jack, for teeing us up on that one. The Instagram crew, I think we might get kicked off of Instagram in just about a minute or so. We're on Facebook and YouTube if you want to join us over there. I see we got a fun crew on Instagram. Thank you guys so much. We love you guys. Thank you all for being there. Let's get to as many as we can. I want to be respectful of your time, Ange, and we'll get off. We're going to take just a couple more. Jessica's asked, she's been patient. What's the effects of montelukast? I've been on it without knowing it has a black box label. I'm having some symptoms that associate with montelukast, but most doctors won't address it. I'll be honest with you, Ange. I have no clue what montelukast is.
Yeah, it treats allergies. It treats allergies and asthma. So montelukast Singulair. That's right, oh, Singulair, yeah. I believe. So too. It works against inflammation, allergies, that kind of deal. It's also to an asthma drug. Like you can use that as secondary to asthma and like with some of the bronchodilators that you use. The black box warning, I'm not as familiar with the black box warning. We don't do a ton of Singulair in the office. But too, that's new to me. So I'm going to look it up that it might be, some of this new stuff that they're coming out with deals with like mood disorders. Let me look this up. So yeah. Unusual change in mood or behavior. I have not seen it. I have maybe one or two patients on Singulair. I haven't seen it. So that's something I would have to look up a little bit more. That's not something that's been commonly talked about. Yeah. But montelukast deals with allergies, inflammation associated with asthma. I've seen it do some good, but too, if it's giving you some symptoms, I would say definitely get off. Definitely get off. Don't mess around with that and see if your symptoms subside. Because a lot of the times too, especially too, if it deals with mood, a lot of it is get on it, see if it causes it, and then get off if it does cause it. And then we'll finding a different treatment modality for looking if it's for seasonal allergies or if it's for asthma, maybe trying something different for that.
Jessica,
I'm sorry you're dealing with that too, and they're not addressing it. I would say if you're having any sort of symptoms with that, my recommendation, I know we can't make medical recommendations per individual, but if that were happening to me, I would stop it.
Jessica, thank you for putting that in there. I hope that helps a little bit. I hope it gets better. Let's see, I missed Becky. I'm sorry, Becky, about this. I'm confused when it comes to magnesium. How do I know which type to take? I know this is one we get a lot because there's like a million magnesiums.
There's so many. There's citrate, oxide, glycinate, threonate, chloride, lactate. There's a lot. Typically what I do, there's a malate too. Malate, lactate. Yeah, there's all of them. I think there's 10. Usually what I like is one that has a brain magnesium. Brain magnesium is usually going to give you an oxide, a threonate, or a glycinate. That's going to be really good for blood pressure. It's going to be good for blood flow, for the sensitization of the nerve outlets that we were talking about earlier. Sleep, that's the one that I like at like 500 milligrams. I'd say 500 milligrams is the dose that I like to do at night because it can make you sleepy. Citrate is usually for the one that pushes, like that's not pushes, bowel movements. Yeah, yeah. They'll make things go. Yeah. Citrate for bowel movements. I like the brain one. And two, we might have a podcast on.
Yeah, you know what, Brooke, we love Brooke.
Brooke.
Thank you for being here. My goodness, Brooke. Like, and look, and she's saying Robin has a podcast on it, and she does. So Brooke is saying there is an Explain This episode on magnesium that goes over all the magnesiums. So definitely check out if you search for Robin Riddle magnesium, it'll come up, or Explain This magnesium, it should come up. But Brooke, we love you.
I just want to say, yes, okay, Brooke just had a freaking baby and like is on this podcast, came into work, brought her baby in, crushing patients. Brooke's like a freaking superwoman.
I know. I think we actually call her superhero. Do we call her superhero? She's a superhero.
I think we call her superhero.
She's a superhero. Brooke, thank you for being here. Let's see here where we're at.
And, I'm going to plug in my computer. Hold on.
Are you about to die?
Yeah. Well, while you're doing that.
Okay. We're going to some of these questions. Let's see.
I know. We're going dark. We're going dark. Y'all, I only had one plug. I just had one plug. Yeah.
I will say we're going to take one more question, guys, and then we're going to move the rest to next week. I hope I didn't miss anybody. I don't think. Let's see. Where am I at? We got some great comments here. Let's see. While we're waiting, I just want to, Mark's got this one. See if this makes any sense to you. It's probably using language I can't understand, Mark. Andy, have you had a chance to examine the data I sent you regarding the use of lab tests involving amino acids profile and retinol binding as an early indicator for diabetes? What's your quick thoughts on this, Ange? And then we'll see if I'm missing somebody.
I haven't. I'm sorry, Mark.
Mark.
I haven't. I've had a lot of TV shows to catch up on, Mark. I had to watch Fall of the House of Usher. I had to watch School Spirits. I'm catching up on some Harry Potter right now. So I'm so sorry. I have not looked at that. And I will. And I totally will, because Mark is on a mission to cure diabetes, which is amazing. More so than me, which is amazing. I promise I'll look that up, Mark. And too, when you bring those donuts in, I want Johnson City to get the donuts, okay? Kingsport gets lucky whenever you come in, and then Dad makes us all jealous. So
thank you, Mark, for that. We'll get back to you on it. Carter's putting in if you want to search in Amazon, this is the one that we're recommending for methylene blue. Thank you, Carter, for putting that in there for everybody. And I think there we go. There's the different types of magnesium. Explain this episode with Robin Riddle. If you guys are interested in learning more about magnesium and all the different types, thank you, team, for putting that in there. Ange, man, I love you.
I love you too. I love you like a brother.
He is my brother.
Bend my notice here, match my pitch. Then I'll go to the third above. You're on this note.
I love you, man. Montana, we love you. Thank
Montana's
you for being
in the
here.
House.
Yes, Montana is in the house.
Amber's in here too.
We got we got such a great crew. Amber, yes. We love you. We got Matt in the building. Go Vols.
Nico
for Heisman. our Tennessee football fans will.
Is Tim
we'll get
Tebow's
the reference.
Not playing still? I'm late to the game.
is Peyton still our quarterback?
Is Peyton not playing? Because go Vols.
Hey man, I love you. There, Grandma Mary, thank you. Grandma's giving us a 10.
The Keekmeister. God loves Keeks.
But seriously, Ange, I know you've had a super busy day. Thank you for doing this. It means the world to everyone in here. We certainly do appreciate it. And guys, real quick, subscribe to the Diabetes Tour Guide. He's putting up some gems. I'm going to put this up for Ange. Devices goes over the Eversense continuous glucose monitor, kind of goes about how they work, what they do. Huge shout out to the diabetes.
Do you remember when I had that mustache? Now it's, I'm doing a new show. Shout out to Jonesboro.
Yep.
I'm doing a show in about 6 weeks. Come see it. It's beautiful. The musical, the Carole King musical.
Yep.
And it'll be great. It's going to be really great. But I do have to, I do have to shave my face for that. And I said goodbye to a lot of mustache days. So yes, this has been great. Ben, anytime spent with you. Okay. Anytime.
Hey, I love you, man.
Look at that lighting. Look at that lighting, Ben. God, that looks good.
Guys, thank y'all for being here with us tonight. Sherry, thank you for the kind words. D-Lynn, thank you. Linda, thank you. Mark, thank you so much for the great questions. Rachel, RIP the stash. Linda, it's at the Jonesboro Repertory Theater. That's in Jonesboro, Tennessee. We'll put up
it's an unbelievable theater. Yeah. It's, I'm telling you, it is a gym in this area. And we have our nutrition coach, Lucas, his mom, one of the best human beings I know, Jennifer, runs that theater and just does such a great job. The theater is amazing.
Guys, thank y'all. Thank y'all for being here. If I missed a question, I apologize. I promise we'll go through, and the ones I missed, we'll make sure to get on next week's show. We'll be back next week, Tuesday, 7 p.m. for live Q&A. Andy, I love you, man.
I love you, too. I'll see you, Ben.
We are out of here. Brad, take us away.
Don't go away.
Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.